that we join Julie First and Adrian Morehouse in the Cat's Whiskers studio.
And welcome to a new series of Cat's Whiskers. It's great to be back.
Tonight you can hear the first episode of our new serial, The House of Arden, in which two children travel back in time to look for hidden treasure.
Another traveller in Cat's Whiskers tonight is explorer Dr. Pete Rowan, who joins us to answer your questions about his adventures.
And our birthday guest is a well-known weatherman. I hope he can forecast better weather than we've got here in the Cat's Whiskers studio. It's raining cats and dogs.
But now, our whodunit. Have pens and papers ready to see if you can help Kitty Purwell and Dick Dogsbody solve their latest mystery. The case of the kidnapped cupcake. Kitty Purwell, private eye, ace detective and super sleuth for the city of Spanchester. Kidnapping leaves a nasty taste in my mouth. And so does a garlic flavoured gobstopper, but that's another story altogether. And just as dastardly as kidnapping is the crime of dognapping. When a dog's disappeared, when a mutt's gone missing, when a poacher's been purloined, then it's time to call for Purwell and Dogsbody. Get that, would you, Dogsbody, old chap?
Right, you okay, P.
Kitty Purwell, Detective Agency. Dick Dogsbody speaking. Can I be of any assistance?
My name is Dolores Devine.
What? Dolores Devine, the famous film star? Wow! I've seen all your films, Miss Devine. Cool! I think you're really smashing.
Yes, I know all that, but I need help. Something absolutely terrible has happened. My darling, darling little doggy's been stolen.
Oh, rough. Rough.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dogsbody. It's just that the dear, dear little doggy means the world to me.
Oh, don't so fret, Miss Devine. We'll find your dog for you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm staying at the Spanchester Splendide Hotel. Penthouse suite, please come quickly.
Leave it to us, Miss Devine. We'll be with you in two shakes of a corgi's tail. Well, KP, looks like we're in business again.
Right here, old man. Bicycle clips on. You can tell me all about this fascinating little doggy tail on the way. The penthouse suite.
I'm really excited, KP. I never met a famous film star before.
Ah, Miss Purwell, Mr. Dogsbody, how kind of you to come. Entree, entree. Sit yourselves down. That's the way. Can I get either of you a drink?
Not for me, thanks.
Well, I wouldn't say no to a cup of cocoa if there's one going.
No time for that, Dogsbody. Pencil, pad, get scribbling.
Oh, yeah, right.
Now, Mr. Vine. Tell us a bit more about your lost dog.
Oh, my darling little cupcake. Well, that's her name, you see. Well, one minute she was frisking about on the carpet with her little plastic bone, and the next minute she was gone. I searched high and low, but no joy. Nothing. And then, just after I phoned you, this note was slipped under the door.
Aha. Read that, could you, Dogsbody?
Right, you okay, Pete. If you want to see your precious dog again, then just do as I say. Put £5,000 into an envelope, walk out of the hotel and turn left. Go along the pavement for 700 yards, then drop the money into the rubbish bin. Keep walking and don't look back.
Well, what do you make of that, old man?
Well, it's handwritten. Not much else I can tell you, KP.
Pass it here. What's this?
What is it, Kuiper?
My nose is a highly trained and sensitive organ able to recognize and differentiate 427 common smells. And if I'm not very much mistaken, I detect a minute smell of linseed oil emanating from this note. Mr. Vine, who else has access to these rooms?
There's Orson Ryder, my manager.
Orson Ryder?
And Claude Frox, my costume designer.
Claude Frox?
Not forgetting Hazel Twig, my keep fit consultant.
Hazel Twig?
But I think you'll find they're all out at present.
Excellent. That gives us a chance to search their rooms for clues. We'll find your lost dog, Mr. Vine. All we need is a lead. Well, I searched Mr. Ryder's and Mr. Fox's room, but nothing there, I'm afraid. How about you, old man?
I went through Miss Twig's room, but I couldn't find a thing, nothing. Not a sausage. Well, actually, there were some sausages in the fridge, but you know what I mean.
Gee, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Ah, you must be Orson Ryder. I'm Kitty Powell. I'm investigating Mr. Vine's missing dog.
Oh, yeah, Cupcake. All right, well, I'd better tell you straight. I couldn't stand that moth-eaten mutt anyway.
And what exactly was that, Mr. Ryder?
Oh, the dog was an animal. Last week, Dolores makes me take the brute out for a walk. There we were, going peacefully along the sidewalk, when the darn dog spots a cat. Chases it up an alleyway, and the next minute, kapow! There's trash and garbage flying everywhere. Sheesh! And that's not all. That horrendous hound has just cost me a fortune. I get Dolores a part in a big Hollywood movie, $1 million contract, but she refuses to go to Hollywood because Cupcake doesn't like flying. So the whole deal's called off. Don't talk to me about that dratted dog. I hate that dog.
I hate that horrible dog. I hate it. I do. Nasty, vicious little so-and-so.
Frox, calm down. What's that poor little boss doggy ever done to you?
I will show you what that monster's done. Come. This dress that I make for Mr. Van was to be my masterpiece. Look. 10,000 sequins, every one lovingly sewn by hand. So what happens? That horrible creature creeps in here and rips the whole thing to shreds. Well, I, Claude Frox, have had enough. I pack my bags and return to Paris, where I'm treated with a bit of respect.
Yes, I can see you're very cut up about it, Mr. Frox. If you'd just be kind enough to write your forwarding address in my assistant's notepad, I'd be very grateful.
Oh, oui. Give it here, monsieur. There. Now I'm off.
Claude Frox, 37, Le Rue de Nois, Paris.
Here, look, Kitty. Funny way he writes on number 7. Look, with a little line across the figure.
That's the Continental 7, old chap.
Ooh.
There's one more person to interview, and if I'm not mistaken, that's Miss Hazel Twig.
Hop, 2, 3, 4. Hop, 2, 3, 4.
Ah, Miss Twig. Sorry to disturb you in the middle of your exercises.
Hop and down and hop and
Miss
down.
Miss Twig,
and...
please.
Oh, sorry. Now, what is it you wanted to see me about exactly?
It's about Mr. Vine's missing dog.
I suppose you're going to tell us you hated it as well. Everyone else seems to.
Not at all. Love dogs, actually. Love all animals, come to that. That's why I'm a vegetarian. Couldn't bear to eat an animal. Just not on.
Miss Twig, what were you doing earlier this morning?
Day off today. Playing cricket later for the Spamchester Ladies 11. Had to sort out my kit. Get the old shoes whitened. Oil my bat. All that sort of thing. Oh, I'll knock him for 6 this afternoon, you see if I don't.
Well, thank you, Miss Twig. You've been most helpful.
What now, Kuiper? We don't seem to be making much progress.
On the contrary, my dear Dogsbody. This one's already in the bag.
Yeah, the doggy bag. You're brilliant, you are, Kuiper. Really, 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 really brilliant.
Who did steal Dolores Devine's little dog Cupcake and who wrote the ransom note demanding £5,000?
Was it Orson Ryder? He didn't like the dog. Or Claude Frox? He hated it.
Or maybe it was Hazel Twig, the keep fit freak. Two clues point the finger of guilt towards one person, and two further clues eliminate the innocent parties. Let us know your solution as soon as possible, and there'll be fingerprinting sets for the two lucky winners.
Those of you in our Cat's Whiskers Club should have received the latest magazine. Inside, apart from the wonderful pictures of myself and Julie, there's also a photograph of Kitty Pearl and Dick Dog's body, just in case you were wondering what they look like. There's a story in which you have to crack a secret code, and all sorts of information about Cat's Whiskers. So if you haven't joined the club yet, write in to us for details.
And now, over to the Weather Centre. Our first birthday guest in the new series is that well-known weatherman, Michael Fish. Welcome to Cat's Whiskers.
Thank you very much.
Do your friends and relations always check with you before they book their holidays?
Well, some do and some don't. I can never give them a forecast, you see, because they always want to know weeks or months in advance. But what they sometimes come and ask me is what it should be like on average, because obviously you don't want to go and book to go to a place where it's the height of the rainy season or something like that. So that's the odd piece of advice I can give, but never a forecast. Incidentally, it's just occurred to me how appropriate your programme is, Cat's Whiskers, because there is an old wives' tale about the cat's whiskers. You can actually use them to tell the weather.
Because I can imagine your house sort of strewn with seaweed and things.
No, it's strewn with cats, actually. I used the cat's whiskers in order to try and tell the weather. Oh, seaweed's all right, too, yeah.
Can you? And what about things like the thing about the sunset?
Red sky at night, shepherd's delight, and red sky in the morning, shepherd's warning, I think it is. Yes, there's a little bit of truth in it, but a lot of these old wives' tales were written hundreds of years ago before people really had a major understanding of the weather, and most of them, to use an in-house pun, don't hold any water these days.
How far can you forecast then?
We can forecast with some degree of confidence up to about 10 days ahead. I wouldn't pretend they're accurate that far ahead, but for really fairly good forecasts, say 5 days.
And what about in the mornings? Can you sort of decide whether to take the umbrella and raincoat with you?
Oh, yes. I have a raincoat and an umbrella with me all the time. I'm not going to get caught out, am I?
What about your day, your working day at BBC Television Centre where we're talking today? Does it just start and finish with you going on television and reading the forecast?
Well, no, there are all sorts of days, you see. We work for the Meteorological Office, which is part of the Ministry of Defence, and the weather never finishes, so we are on duty, or we have to cover the whole 24-hour period. Now, for instance, here at the television centre, we often start at sort of 6:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock, something like that, and don't finish until 10 or 11 o'clock in the evening, so it can be a pretty long day.
But you actually have to find the weather out yourself. I mean, do you have to go and sit on the roof and hold your finger in the air or something?
Yes.
Where the wind's blowing, you know.
Yes, they've had me doing that once, holding a lightning conductor in the middle of a thunderstorm. Apart from producing the basic forecast, we do everything else ourselves, camera work.
Yes, because it's all very technical now.
It's all a very one-man game.
You don't stick the little clouds on
anymore. Oh, no. It takes 2 or 3 hours to prepare a broadcast before we actually go on air. We don't just pop up for about a couple of minutes and then go home. You know, it's a long working day.
Going back to your childhood, were you always interested in the weather?
Yes, I've always been interested in the weather since 9, 10, something like that. I didn't want to be an engine driver or whatever was fashionable then. I just was interested in weather, meteorology, and wanted to join the Met Office. Becoming a weatherman, as such, in inverted commas, was just one of these happy accidents that I never even dreamt of.
We're talking about birthdays and your age, which you've very cleverly not given away yet.
I give it in Celsius.
Yes.
Six
in Celsius. You see if you can work that out. Your birthday's on Thursday, 27th. What are you going to do, and do you need good weather for it?
Well, I made a rule when I started work that I would never ever work on my birthday, and I shall most certainly keep to that this year.
But have you any plans? Are you going to go out, do something?
No plans, really. I just hope to sort of take life easy, put my feet up, eat, drink, and be merry.
We always ask our birthday guests to pick a piece of music. Michael, what would you like?
Well, nothing else but a very lovely record about a very lovely person by Rachel and Nikki, I think it was, called I Wish You Was Like Michael Fish.
Club members who share their birthdays with Michael Fish are Paul Mitchell Gears, Christopher Getliff, Alan Ireland and Robert Allen,
Geffen Ewan, Gary Bickerton, Hannah Foster and James Boning,
also Sam and Dan Burke, Lucy Parker and Matthew Munro.
Happy birthday to Sorrel Roundtree, Astrid Kilburn, Benjamin Roth and Tom Dennis.
Also, Kerry Westgarth, Matthew Harrison, John Miller and Daisy Clear.
And it's happy birthday to Chloe Hennigan, Anthea Carter, John Kay and Harriet Cobley.
Happy birthday club members Ian Lunn, Adam Wilkins, Aaron Turpin and Catherine Geimer.
Edward Oliver, Andrew Sharple, Sara Lopez and Elizabeth Hanlon.
Julo Seneschal, Victoria Briggs, Alan West, Timothy Manners and Tom Beat.
And lastly, Rowan Lawton, Sophie Dunn, Philip Sweeting, Amy Sanger, Julia Taylor and Christina Lockwood. Happy birthday to everyone celebrating this week. Thanks for all the brain teasers you've sent me in during the Easter break. We're still going to try and catch you out, Adrian.
Have I still got 5 seconds or can I have 10
this
time?
Nope, you've only got 5. And here is the first one. Jack Harris is on the phone now from County Cork.
Hello, Adrian. Here I've got a brain teaser for you. 3 men were rowing across the English Channel when their boat sprung a leak and sunk. All 3 men fell into the water, but only 2 got their hair wet. How could this be?
So you got the hair wet? Well, I guess one of them was bald. That's the only answer I can give.
Well done, Adrian.
Thank you.
Okay, so Adrian got that one right, but well done and thank you anyway, Jack. And we'll send you a Cat's Whiskers pen. Now, if you've got a brain teaser for Adrian, send it to me at Cat's Whiskers.
Well, we've got Dr. Pete back in the Cat's Whiskers studio for a phone-in this week.
Yes, Adrian, we've had loads of letters to meet Cat's Whiskers, and we've got our first caller on the line now. Tim Barry from Leighton Buzzard. Hello, Tim. You've got a question about jiggers, I think. What do you want to know?
What happens if a jigger bites?
You probably know what a jigger is, but there'll be a few people who don't. A jigger is a flea, so it's a wingless, blood-sucking insect. And an unf-jigger is about 1 millimetre long, but the female jigger, if she bites, and they usually bite you between the toes, can burrow in and get up to about the size of a pea and cause a very nasty infection, and I think people have died because the infection, if it gets into the blood, can kill. It's one of the reasons people say you should never go barefoot in the tropics, and there are other reasons as well. Worms can get into you that way. If you're unlucky enough to get one under your toenail, apparently if you varnish between the toenail and your foot, you'll suffocate it. But there aren't any jiggers, as far as I know, in the UK. The largest UK flea, if you want to tell your friends this at school tomorrow, is the mole flea, which is 6 millimetres long.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Tim. And nail varnish, remember, nail varnish is also useful for ticks and mites and any of these things if you want to suffocate them if they're attacking you or biting you. Tom Brown, who's phoning Cat's Whiskers from Twickenham. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
What's your question, Tom?
Can an elephant catch a cold?
Tom, I would think it could. I've never had a patient who was an elephant, but I'm sure colds are caused by viruses, and I'm sure if these germs get on of an elephant, it would give it a cold. I imagine, though, that when it sneezes, it'd be one of the most enormous sneezes in the world. I mean, when you sneeze, the air comes out at the speed of a hurricane. I've never measured it in an elephant, but it must be really something worth seeing. On the phone to Cat's Whiskers is Catherine Slowey from Birmingham. Hello, Catherine.
Hello.
What's your question?
How many people get eaten by crocodiles a year?
About 2,000. You might like to know that lions, tigers and leopards together eat about 1,000 people. Most of those are eaten by tigers, then leopards, then the lions eat about 40 a year. But crocodiles, 2,000 people. The Nile crocodile, it eats people when they do their washing in the Nile. The ladies tend to stand bashing the washing on the rocks and they point their bottoms out towards the river so they can do this. And the crocodile often will drift up and bite them. So if you're ever washing in the Nile, don't point your bottom at the river. You might like to know as well that if you actually go up to a crocodile, you can really, it's fairly easy if you're strong, to hold the jaw shut. So if the mouth's shut, you can hold it shut. One in Botswana was shot when they opened it up, and inside it a zebra, a donkey, 2 goats, and a woman who'd been missing for 17 days. But I don't think people should really shoot animals, do you?
No.
No. Kate Robson from Shabbington, Aylesbury. Hello, Kate.
What would you do if you got lost in the bush?
Once I was lost on some moorland. I think the thing to do is you walk downhill until you find a stream, and then you follow the stream downhill, and you can obviously tell which way that is, and you just keep going, and eventually you will come to perhaps a house or a road or somewhere where you can get some help. But I hope you never are lost in the bush.
Okay.
Always go well prepared for things like that, because usually someone will come and look for you. And as long as you don't panic and you've got things with you, you've got the right sort of clothing, or you've got enough water and food, as long as you've got something to survive, then you'll usually be all right. Well, thanks for all the letters to me at Cat's Whiskers, and I hope they've answered some of your questions. If we didn't get through to you on the phone, maybe we'll do it another time, but thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Dr. Pete, for that. I hear you've been out in the Seychelles the last couple of weeks. How's that been going?
Well, I've been treasure hunting out there, Adrian. It's a great place. There used to be pirates there, and I'm sure there's some buried treasure out there somewhere, and I've been looking for it.
Well, I hope you find it. And we'd like you to come back in a couple of weeks and tell us about it, if you could.
OK, I'll tell you something about the pirates' treasure map as well.
Great. We'll look forward to that.
There's hidden treasure in our new serial, The House of Arden. Penelope Keith starts off the story as the author, Edith Nesbit, in Episode 1, Arden's New Lord.
Ever dream that one day your ship might come in, of suddenly having 100 or even 1,000 pounds to spend just as you like? Edred and Elfrida Arden, who lived with their Aunt Edith in Cliff House overlooking the sea in a windswept holiday town, often dreamed that one day their ship might come in. Once the Arden, the great family of Arden Castle, but, sadly, their fortune had been lost way back in Oliver Cromwell's time, and by now, the few remaining Ardens were really quite poor. The children's mother had died several years ago, and in the hopes of making their own fortune, their father and Uncle Jim had gone off to South America. 2 years ago, the dreadful news had come that they'd been killed by a band of brigands. Now, all that was left was Cliff House, and no money to live on. Aunt Edith, though, decided they would make money by taking in lodgers. Their only other distant relative was old Lord Arden, who was last heard of living alone in an old house by the ruined walls of Arden Castle, some miles away. And so it is that on this particular morning, Miss Edith Arden is busy in the kitchen of Cliff House, and hoping, for Edred and Elfrida's sake as well as her own, that one day their ship might come in. And that, as it happens, is the postman, bringing three letters. One, of course, is only the plumber's bill, and the other, a letter from a clergyman asking half-price lodgings. But the third is the letter, and, as such, really the beginning of this story.
Oh! Oh, my word!
Is it bad news, Aunt Edith?
No, Edred. Just the opposite.
What do you mean? What is it?
I think just maybe our ship's come in. I must go to London first thing tomorrow and see about it.
Oh, you will be back in time for my birthday, won't you, Auntie Edith?
Of course. I'll be home by tomorrow evening. It isn't your birthday until the day after, and I'll bring you back a present from London.
Next morning, when they'd waved Aunt Edith off on the 8:30 train to London, Edred and his sister set off on a journey of their own. Aunt Edith had given them permission to picnic on the Downs, but there was somewhere else they'd been wanting to go for a long time.
We ought to have asked if we could go today. I'm not sure we should without permission.
But Aunt Edith has never said not to go there, has she?
No, that's right. I don't suppose she'd mind.
And after all, it is our castle.
It's not really.
Well, in a way. It's where all our ancestors lived back in the olden days. We could go by train.
And so, without further argument, they set off. And it was from the train they had their very first sight of Arden Castle, ruined but still splendid. After the train ride, the two struggled up the steep cliff path and then stood looking up at its walls.
These walls, they must be at least 60 feet high, Elf. Yes, but I can't see any way in. There doesn't seem to be a gate.
No. Look, there's an old man going across the field. Let's ask him.
All right.
Oh, come on, Elf. Hurry up.
Now then, what is it you be wanting?
We want to know about
the castle.
Can't we get in and look at it?
Well, I do have the keys, but...
I don't suppose anyone lives there anymore.
No. Old Lord Arden died a fortnight ago. Place is shut up till they can trace an heir to the castle. And who knows, eh? The new lord might have a chance of finding the treasure.
Treasure?
Well, according to the saying, there's jewels and silver hidden away in olden times. You've not heard the saying?
No.
When Arden's lord is not yet 10 and may not see his 9 again.
That's like you, Edred. You're not yet 10.
It's not my 10th birthday till
tomorrow. You want to hear this saying or not?
Sorry.
When Arden's lord is not yet 10 and may not see his 9 again, let Arden stand as Arden may on Arden Knoll at close of day. If he have skill to say the spell, he'll find the treasure and all be well. That there's Arden Knoll, you see. That mound up there.
But what's the spell?
Ah, now, that nobody knows. They do say it be hidden in some book in the house up yonder. Tain't no good, though, because there's never been a Lord Arden who's not yet 10.
I suppose you've got to be Lord Arden to find the treasure. I mean, I don't suppose it'd do to be just plain Jack or John or Edred, because my name's Edred...
What?
Yes, it is.
Here, let's have a good look at you. Aye, that's the Arden nose, all right.
Auntie Edith did say the old Lord Arden was a sort of distant relative of ours.
Was he now? Well, the old Lord not having any children, I suppose that'd make your father heir to the title.
Our father's dead.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But that means you could be the new Lord Arden.
Me? But I can't be.
But, Edred, it is possible.
Well, if I am, I'll say the spell and we can find the treasure.
You'll have to be quick about it. You'll be 10 tomorrow.
Well, I expect you and your sister would like to go and explore the castle. You can bring the keys back to me when you've done.
Oh, thank you.
That one's house.
But where is the house?
Oh, you'll find it all right. And who knows, you might even come across the spell as well. Stranger things have happened in that old place.
And so, Edred and Elfrida made their way up to the great grey walls of the castle. Turning a corner, they saw that there were 4 wooden doors set into the ancient stone, and so they tried all the keys and all the doors. One led to a loft where apples was, another to a cellar, and the third opened into a tower that they used as a pigeon loft. It was the very last door they tried that led into a long garden at the end of which stood a narrow house. The blinds were drawn. The garden felt chill and quiet and smelt of dead dry leaves. And it was very slowly, and with a feeling of being on tiptoe and holding their breaths, that the two went towards the darkened windows that looked, the closer they got, like eyes firmly closed over some dark secret.
I wonder what secret Edred and Elfrida will find in the castle. You're here next week.
Next weekend sees the start of National Pet Week. So there'll be a few animals running around the studio, including a hamster at large.
And there's a great competition which gives you a chance to tell us about your special pets.
I hope you'll join us next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Cat's Whiskers was presented by Julie First and Adrian Moorhouse. The address is Cat's Whiskers, BBC, PO Box 40, Manchester M60 1FR. Those taking part in the programme were Elizabeth Estenson, Timothy Spall, Judy Parkin, Peter Wheeler, Nigel Carrington, Leslie Kaufman, Henry Power, Kelly Bright, Marcia King and Michael Graham Cox. The researcher was Liz Roberts, and the programme was produced in Manchester by Mary Callum-Carrion.